We kick off hour number two. Want to get to some of your reaction here on the old tweet box. You can hit us up at Fox Sports Knox or Houston's at Vol Rumor Mill. I'm at Nate Hodges. Andy tweets in, Tennessee has out-recruited Vanderbilt, yet continues to lose to them. Top 20 classes haven't done much to curb that trend. We talked yesterday, and I mean, it applies less and less each year, but in the first year, it's going to apply the most. Like, yeah, less talented players when they enter Vanderbilt's program, but at least when
stability.
You look at last year, I mean, it's a cohesive plan of how to develop those players, how to build schemes to fit what they do. It's the players that you wanted or that you could – or the best players you could get, I guess. I should put it that way. And I do think, like, if Tennessee plays Vanderbilt this year, I'm going to expect – was Vandy – Tennessee was favored in that game with your run down to the odds yesterday, right?
This year's game, the coming game.
Yeah.
Yeah, by a touchdown-ish.
So, like, I expect Tennessee to win that game. I also, though, I mean, if Vanderbilt has a good year and, like, you know, has one of those years where they hang around with Georgia for a while and they, you know, beat one of Florida, South Carolina, or Missouri, and they, you know, I don't know, if they win a few games in conference and then they beat Tennessee in a close game, I won't necessarily freak out. I expect Tennessee to win. If it's a close loss that's weird or Vandy's better than expected this year, I won't freak out. However, if Vanderbilt's not that good when compared to the other teams in the SEC East, and then we get completely outplayed by them again, that's when I'll freak out. That's when I'll be like, come on, Pruitt and company. You have better players now. You've had a full, you know, year plus to get them indoctrinated. Like, what's going on? So, I mean, I do think this season, we looked at the schedule yesterday, has a lot of games that will be great litmus tests for you. I mean, playing Mississippi State. I mean, it's Joe Moorhead's second year. They've already extended him this week. They've already decided they're going to have him for, what, five more or something?
What was it, a four-year initially? So he's now 8 years under contract? Had to be at least four initially, right?
Yeah,
maybe
so,
five?
So they tacked five more onto it?
That's what it said, five-year extension. Yeah.
That seems what's the worst extension ever in college football? Is it Charlie Weiss at Notre Dame? Didn't he have like one good year?
Probably that Butch Jones one in year. I'm just kidding. Sorry.
I feel like Charlie Weiss got like a 10-year extension or something crazy after like
we
one
might say
good
the
year.
Rick Barnes one's here in a couple years. We said we might. I don't know.
Trying to be optimistic.
I said we might. We might think it's the greatest extension of all time.
It's true.
It's all.
But, I mean, you're going to play Mississippi State. That's a great litmus test game. A lot of these SEC East games, Missouri, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, and South Carolina, I mean, that's four right there that are all at different levels of coin flip, right? Like a little odds a little more in your favor in some, a little less in others.
Well, here, let's just do it. So BYU, Tennessee is expected to be favored by 6.5 to 7. That's as of now. Obviously, these things change.
I'm with you. Anything inside a touchdown to me is like a swing game.
Yeah. And at home, remember, you're getting kind of two and a half to 3.5 points for home field. But Tennessee over BYU, that's game two. Tennessee plays Georgia State 100 days from today. August 31st, we're inside 100 days, or we're at 100 days.
It's 100 days. Who wore number 100 at Tennessee? So we can do the whole,
I'll start that tomorrow, I'm afraid.
Oh,
I don't think
okay.
They don't do three digits. But Georgia State, August 31st for your home opener. I don't think there are times set for any games yet, are there?
Mm-mm.
Okay, I didn't know if maybe Georgia State they'd go ahead and say that's going to be pay-per-view 4:30 something like that. But BYU, September 7th, Tennessee expected to be a 6.5 to 7 point favorite. I think that's going to be that's a good challenge game. It is one I think Tennessee should win, but BYU's not terrible.
That's perfect.
Their quarterback is really really good.
It's the
their defense they yeah. lost. I think they lost like 8 starters on defense. Defense might stink for BYU. This will be a good test for Tennessee's secondary in year two under Jeremy Pruitt, Alante Taylor, Bryce Thompson, Nigel Warrior, and then whoever the hell else they put at the second safety spot.
I pulled up a schedule, and I was scrolling down, you know, looking at the times, just wanted to verify that no times have been set. Because, you know, sometimes even like Florida, Georgia will be set before the season, 3:30, yada, yada,
yeah.
cocktail. And I got kind of the end. And just quickly, I saw, 4 o'clock. Oh, and I was about to say, oh, yeah, one game is scheduled. And then I realized –
SEC Championship?
It's the SEC Championship.
I don't think we have to worry about that one. But, again, optimism Thursday. We could be surprised. The next game on your schedule that has a line at this point, because obviously Georgia State and Chattanooga, you're going to be favored by, you know,
a lot.
28-plus, is Florida. September 21st, you travel to Gainesville. As of now, it's early, but we've seen this line in a few places. Florida expected to be about a 2-touchdown favorite in the Swamp. It'll be very interesting after 3 games where that line kind of falls. Don't forget, they get Miami now in week 0. Miami's going to be very good, I don't think. They weren't particularly good last year, but they do have a new coach. It is a neutral site game in the middle of the state. Could be interesting. I think in my head I want to say 10-ish. I think that line will shrink to about 10 by the time that game rolls around. I don't know that Florida is going to be the juggernaut that so many people are predicting them to be. A lot of off-the-field stuff in Gainesville this offseason so far, and they had another starting linebacker enter the transfer portal yesterday, Rajon something. I'll find it here in a minute. After Florida, Tennessee gets a bye week. Thank you. Then Georgia comes to town. As of now, Georgia expected to be a 15.5 to 16-point favorite. It's weird that it's only about a point more than Florida. I don't know if this is an undervaluing of Georgia, an overvaluation of Florida, or what. I've kind of figured Georgia would be similar to what they were last year. I mean, they lost some, but they didn't lose that much. After Georgia, Mississippi State, the very next weekend. At this point, Mississippi State expected to be favored by only 3 to 3.5 points. Something tells me that one might go up. I think their backup quarterback is really good, and he's now not their backup with Nick Fitzgerald sneak up and beat somebody moving on. But we'll see. They should have been better than they were last year, I thought, especially early in the season, and that offense really, really struggled to get going. Joe Moorhead, though, as you mentioned, did sign the extension. He'll now be at Mississippi State forever. Alabama, obviously favored by infinity, 24.5 to 25 as of now. Could see that one going up. South Carolina comes to Neyland Stadium. They're expected to be 3 to 3.5 point favorites. Again, I mean, that's a coin flip game to me. You probably should have won that game last year. I would imagine Jeremy Pruitt going to do a little bit of a defensive switcheroo on Jake Bentley and the Gamecocks. The question now is, can Jim Chaney crack the code that Tyson Helton was unable to, which is the quick game worked, but how do we get that over-the-top big play or just an ability to run the football, which would be
October 26th,
awesome.
South Carolina?
Yes.
I don't know. One of my hot takes for the SEC this year might be that
they stink.
Jake Bentley's not your quarterback, South Carolina, by that point in the season.
The Helsinki kid?
Helsinki.
Helsinki.
Jake Bentley took a beating from their fan base last year. Like, if he struggles, and their schedule is, as we've mentioned, brutal. I don't know. Anyway.
Well,
continue.
I meant just kind of the offense in general.
Yeah.
What they like to do.
What? I just thought, throw that in there. I mean, they open with North Carolina. They have Alabama. They have at Georgia and then Florida. Both of those games are right before the road trip to Tennessee. So they have a bye week, go to Georgia, Florida at home, then to Tennessee.
Well, we're coming off an Alabama game, so.
Yeah, it should be about equal.
We'll call that one square. South Carolina. Then UAB comes to town November 2nd. I was surprised to see this number. Tennessee, 16.5 to 17-point favorites as of now over UAB. A lot of people saying UAB's pretty damn good. That could be a trap game scenario for Tennessee. Then Kentucky. Tennessee travels to Lexington. As of now, Tennessee a 2-point favorite on the road in Lexington. Tennessee, a 4 or 4.5-point underdog at Missouri. And then Vanderbilt comes to Neyland to end the season on November 30th. Tennessee, as of now, expected to be a 7 to 7.5-point favorite in that one. So there you go. Your underdogs in 6, your favorites in 6. Obviously, the 4 out-of-conference games, you're favored, and you are favored over Vanderbilt and, what was the other one? Kentucky. But those other teams that you're kind of in the mix with South Carolina and Missouri. Those are, you know, 3 to 4.5 point lines. And then the Mississippi State game, which I think is kind of interesting. Tennessee only a 3 to 3.5 point underdog in that one as of now.
There's also 6 games that's within a touchdown.
You're talking about either way?
Yeah, either way. Tell me if I have this right. BYU, Mississippi State.
Most people consider a touchdown 6. This is 6.5, 7. So they're saying a full touchdown.
Okay, I'm going to go 7.
Okay.
For this exercise. BYU, Mississippi State, South Carolina, Kentucky, Missouri, Vanderbilt.
Yeah, Vanderbilt could be 7.5, so maybe a shade over, but we'll see. But
is there
yes.
a UAB line? Sorry, I know you already went through that.
Yeah, 17, okay. Tennessee. And then obviously it'll be infinity against Georgia State and the other one of, who was that? Chattanooga. Although Chattanooga came in here and sacked the pants off of us 3 years ago. Do you remember that game? Four years ago? Justin Worley was just getting absolutely killed. Killed. We've been accused of excusing a possible loss to Vandy.
I said I'm going to freak out if they completely outplay us. How is that excusing it?
I didn't even excuse last year's. I don't know how anyone got that. Now, last year's, I think the difference was that that's a team that, even though they're not very good, they know exactly what they're going to do. They were pretty senior-oriented. Their quarterback was a senior, Kyle Shermer. He also loved playing against Tennessee. His career numbers against Tennessee were absolutely ridiculous. They had a lot of seniors. That was a team that, no, they weren't more talented than you, but they knew more of what they were doing than you did. I would hope that in year two, you've got more talent, obviously, and now you've got a team that's more streamlined in their identity, that game shouldn't be a problem. And you're if they lose as a 7.5 point favorite, it's gonna be very loud around here, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, I may not freak out if the situation is kind of weird. Like, Notre Dame beat Vanderbilt last year by 5 at their home field and ended up in the playoff. Weird. It's college football. Like, weird stuff can happen. I was trying to give all the different categories. If Vanderbilt outplays Tennessee,
no, but
they will to have to win in any.
Well, yeah, but that's a hypothetical. And I think if you look at it right now, there is no foreseeable excuse as to why Tennessee should not beat Vanderbilt this year. You're at home.
Sure.
You're likely going to be in bowl position, trying to improve it, I would hope, or playing for a bowl. Hopefully not, but hopefully you've already got it secured. I don't think there's any excuse. They're going to have a new quarterback. They lost their running back, who was really, really good, who also dominated you for 3 years. This should be a year where you climb back over the top of the likes of Vanderbilt, Kentucky, hopefully Missouri, hopefully South Carolina, and then make some noise out of conference and maybe steal one from Mississippi State. That's 8-4. That'd feel pretty good. If Tennessee loses to Georgia, Alabama, Florida, I mean, are we saying all those are kind of guarantees at this point? Like, you're viewing them as certain losses in your head, right?
Mm-hmm.
Georgia, Florida, Alabama. Those are the only double-digit spreads that go against you. So the question is, of all the others, you know, Mississippi State, South Carolina, Missouri, I mean, how many of those can you win? Kentucky, your favorite in, which I think makes sense. It's also kind of weird. Because Kentucky was favored last year, were they not? I know it was a smaller line than a lot of people anticipated.
Yeah, I think they were. I think you should go 8-4. I mean, you get the three. You can sub them out if you beat one of those somehow, and then you lose to a different team. And then there's one to play with. Because somebody's going to be better than everybody expects, and somebody's probably going to be worse than everybody expects. And we're kind of assuming that you're going to be about what we think you'll be under this whole exercise, of course. But, I mean, I do think it's hilarious that the most negative people who say, God, we suck, we're awful, I don't even think Jeremy Pruitt's going to get it done, are the exact same people that are like, you should never lose to Vanderbilt or Kentucky or Missouri or, how can you say both those things? Like, if you think we're that bad, you need to just go ahead and admit the fact that Vanderbilt can beat you.
Well,
Vanderbilt beat Georgia the year, and then Kirby Smart's in the playoff the next year. Losing to Vanderbilt 1 year doesn't necessarily mean you can't be a great team the next year. I know the old curmudgeon, like, 1990 Vols got my windbreaker on people.
Well, that's what it is,
though. Think that you can't lose to Vanderbilt, and the Vanderbilt's a non-conference pushover.
It's a prestige thing.
But wake up.
I mean, but let's not also act like Vanderbilt was good then or now. I mean, you're not either. But
that's kind of my point. Like, you have to pick a side on that. It can't be both. Like, I'm fine. Like, you've said losing to Vanderbilt, unacceptable. It's fine. I agree with you.
That doesn't mean it's not going to happen. But that doesn't mean you fire a coach the second he loses to Vanderbilt.
But you're also not saying that, like, you're also not the same person saying there's no way Jeremy Pruitt gets it done. We suck. I could tell from year one. He'll never.
Well, we talked about it yesterday. Some people just want to be first in line to say I told you so.
It's okay to just be like, I don't know yet.
No, there's no way anyone does. There just isn't. I mean, there's a lot on the table. And we've talked about the importance of year two. I don't want to overstate that, but this is a big year for Jeremy Pruitt. I mean,
oh yeah, huge.
And that's not to say he has to go 9-3 or he has to go 8-4 or even 7-5. There do have to be some things that we see, though, that they don't necessarily have to prove he's going to be an elite level college football coach, but I need to see proof that he is not a moron.
Well, you can tell. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but you can tell once when you know you have a good coach. I sat at a daggum East Tennessee State Tennessee basketball opener. I think that's the right team. And watched Bruce Pearl's team in the very first game at Thompson Bowling Arena and went, holy crap, this guy can coach.
Yeah.
You could tell immediately.
I remember watching the preseason hype video in Neyland Stadium that year where he's coaching him and yelling at him, and I was just like, huh. Just, it sounds different. And you're coming off Buzz Peterson, who, like, ran his practices sitting on the score table and never said a word.
I mean, in year one, like, with Bruce Pearl, you could tell. This cat is different.
Yeah.
And
I think Pruitt's a lot different, too. I just think it's just so much tougher to make that big of a jump. I mean, to go from not in the NCAA tournament to a 2 seed, that was clearly a misidentified roster that was not properly motivated and not running the stuff that kind of suited the talent level. And Pearl's system, with what he inherited, there was no other coach in the country that could have gotten that much out of that basketball team. I don't know if there's another coach in the country that could have gotten more out of Tennessee football last year. Football's just much harder to gauge.
Well, I think there are coaches that could have, but that doesn't change any of the potential for the
future.
Sure,
okay, that's fair.
I mean, hell, I don't know. If Mike Leach rolls in and just puts his system in and maybe you win the South Carolina game, maybe you win the same games you won, and then you win the South Carolina game, and then for some reason you win Vanderbilt. Let's say you still lose Missouri. You know, I don't know. That'd been a better year one. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Jeremy Pruitt's year three is going to be better or worse than Mike Leach's would have been. Or even, say you got Dan Mullen, right? That's a guy John Curry actually went after. Let's say the Florida job hadn't been open last year, and you ended up with Dan Mullen because he just was ready to get out of Mississippi State. I think Dan Mullen, as a guy who's been a head coach before, is more seasoned, I guess, with how to turn around things quickly, with how to maybe simplify things on the front end.
Okay, maybe
more.
I should say a first-year coach then.
Because that's kind of my point. Like, there might have been some little things you could have done differently in year one, but does it really matter? Like, does 5-7 to 7-5 really matter ultimately? No. Really, the question everybody wants to know is, when are you going to be challenging to get to Atlanta?
Yeah.
Like, 6-6, 7-5. Yeah, there's one more Saturday where I feel better. But at the end of the year, who really gives?
No.
You know, it doesn't really matter. The only reason we care is because one points that you're farther along in that quest to be back, right? Back to whatever level you consider is back. Captain Touchback tweeted that he was listening to the show yesterday, and he said that for him, Tennessee being back is when the confidence is back. When you're confident.
That's a very, like, personal heart way of saying it.
When you're confident that 4 wins in November are going to happen, and you're not confident that when you play Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma, those types of teams, that it's going to be a loss. When you roll into an Alabama game thinking, you know, if we play really well today, there's a shot we win.
Those were the days. Yesterday, I actually put that on the Sweet Pea Barbecue poll question. What do you consider as being back? 43% said Tennessee will be back when they win the East. 28% said an SEC championship. 23% said 8 to 10 wins consistently. And only 5% said a national title. I figured more would say title. But I think, again, if you'd asked this 10 years ago, it probably would have. And now it's, let's just get back to the East championship. That'd be great. Or title, whatever we call that. The East title.
I mean, I
don't understand that, though. Tennessee only won two, like, SEC championships since 1992.
I'm trying to think. Right. But winning the East, I mean, they went in 98, 2001, 2004, 2007.
Maybe winning the East is...
Yeah, that's what it was. It was winning the East. Okay. Yeah. It was a much lower number for winning the SEC championship. Because, yeah, it's not like we were doing that consistently.
Right.
Yeah, 43% said win the East. And I feel like if you're winning 8 to 10 consistently in that, you know, however long of duration that kind of has to be to feel consistent, you're probably going to win an East or two. But, yeah, going into football games, not – like, I need more games on the schedule where I know we're going to win than I know we're going to lose. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Or that are just toss-ups.
And when you think you could win any game.
Like sure,
you,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a possibility of winning every game.
I hate it when I look at a schedule and immediately see 3-4 just guaranteed, and not even losses, but like you're not even going to have a chance in that one. And I'd say at this point, and maybe this is orange-colored glasses, and this is just on paper, I'd say there's only one guaranteed, surefire, 100% loss next year, but that doesn't mean I think this is a one-loss team. I think if Tennessee played their A++ game, they could beat a Georgia or a Florida. They probably could not do that and beat Alabama. That said, there's still a very good shot that they lose to Georgia and lose to Florida and possibly, you know, Mississippi State, South Carolina. It's just one of those things.
Billy makes
I said A++++.
Yeah, Billy makes a good point. I think people in their head think the 90s were even better than they were. I mean, there were a lot of people back in the 90s that would be like, God, Philip Fulmer, man, he always has us pretty good, but he can't get over the hump.
Oh, yeah,
of course. We haven't won enough championships.
Yeah, but losing one or two games a year and being disappointed is a lot better than losing eight and being disappointed. I mean, expectations change, right? Like, when you're that good and you're losing one or two games a year, it's like, man, why can't we win those one or two? And now we're talking about, why can't we win those four? To me, it hurts just as much. Like, your level of investment goes up the better you are, so a loss hurts even more.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas last year, you know, you lose to South Carolina, it's like, dang, that stinks. Ah, we weren't supposed to be that good anyway, whatever. But then it also felt amazing when you beat Auburn.
And what, Fulmer had, I think I have this right, five... either division championships or title game appearances, the way like the list here has it, Wikipedia, five in his during his tenure from 1993 to 2008.
He had 10 seasons where he lost at least three games.
10?
Mm-hmm.
Where he lost at least three?
Yep.
Obviously, yeah, that's right.
That includes
five title games. Game appearances, yeah. Two wins, 97, 98.
Yeah, 01, 04, 07
yep.
Losses. All right, we'll come back. Stick with us. We talk Tennessee football right here on Fan Run Radio. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. This segment's brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Keep in mind, they'll be closed to observe Memorial Day on Monday, but...
as will we.
You can check out all the... services at tvacreditunion.com and walk into one of over 20 branches right here in East Tennessee. Right now for the month of May, it's home loans, and they've got home loans focused on you with competitive rates and no PMI options for you. It's tvacreditunion.com. They're celebrating 85 years, helping their members grow financially, moving upward and forward with the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. I hope we see some things in year two from this football team that lets us know, like, because I'm with you. Like, I do think some more veteran head coaches probably could have squeezed another win or two out of that team last year, but under the grand scheme of things, it really doesn't matter. I mean, that's what everybody wants to know. Is Jeremy Pruitt the guy? Is he the guy? I mean, maybe he is, maybe he isn't. And I saw somebody say there's like a 20% chance that Jeremy Pruitt will like be the guy that brings Tennessee back. It's like, well,
20% chance.
I don't know how you come up with that number, but
it's a very complicated algorithm there.
But sure, I guess. I don't know. There's some number out there.
Height plus weight plus coaching experience plus championships plus hair follicles won. So on and so forth.
Don't forget to, multiply by 100 at the end.
Right. Cool. Yeah.
Right. Get the percentage.
The division comes first, but yeah.
Yeah, right. Right. Exactly.
Okay. Like, 20%.
I mean, I don't know. Like,
no, you can't know at this point. A lot of people are confident outside of Tennessee circles that he's the guy, but I don't know. I don't know what it is. It just seems like we always seem to have more to overcome than ever. I don't know if that's necessarily the case right now. I think we do need some stability, and I'm hoping that finally we have it, especially from a university and athletic leadership standpoint. That's been a really big deal.
Yeah.
But
it's kind of like even within a game, it's where it's like you feel like some programs get luckier than others. But then when you dive really into it, you realize that it's more about putting yourself in position to win as much as consistently as possible. Because that way, when really good teams have like a down year, if they're still fairly consistent with a less than ideal crop of players, and when we get another team that comes into your stadium and they don't play very well, you win the game. It's kind of like Kentucky last. Like Kentucky, I wonder what their fans thought last year with how they played at Tennessee. They probably thought they played like complete crap, right? And Tennessee was just consistent enough to make them pay for it.
I would say Kentucky fans just thought that it was, I mean, when a team catches a Hail Mary on you, you just kind
of
think, yeah, not our day. I mean, to your point though, like I think the 2000 Tennessee team is a good example of. It wasn't because you had just lost so much talent off the 97, 98, 99 teams. That team, I mean, I remember in that year, you thought, this is the bottom. This is as bad as it ever gets. They went 8-4. And then the next year, they bounce back and lose one regular season game to Georgia on a, fluke little last minute comeback drive because you messed up the squib kick. But you said, okay. Like, you can live with 2000 because you immediately bounce back to 2001. Then, obviously, 2000's down. Like, it's one thing, when a team kind of dips and then kind of makes that little comeback. Tennessee hasn't had many of those little comeback years. Like, the dip year has been our best year. 8-4 in 2000. That's been the best it's been since 2010. There's an extra game on the schedule, so you got an out-of-conference win that year and went 9-4. But, like, that year, you lost to Florida by 4. You lost at LSU in overtime by 7. You lost at Georgia by 11. And then you lost versus Kansas State in the bowl game because Casey Clawson can't play in the cold, and you lost by 2 touchdowns. So your biggest loss was 14 points in a meaningless bowl game in cold weather with your California quarterback, and that was like the worst season of all time. And now,
did you think you could win every game when the get kicked off that year?
Yeah, and they could have, which is crazy because I remember the 2000 season thinking, oh my gosh, we're just so snake bit. We're not quite good enough. But you could have beat Florida easily. I mean, that was the Gaffney catch, right? If that's called correctly, you beat them.
It's not another down or two.
Well, no, I'm saying then you get a sack or something. I know that was third down or second down, so they did. But I'm just saying, it's just amazing to me.
Yeah.
And then you lost in overtime to LSU. Like that's a winnable game. And then the Georgia game, if you'd started Casey Clawson in that one, you're probably He may have actually started in that one, but he wasn't very good against Georgia. But yeah, like losing 21-10, I mean, that's, you can win a game like that. You still thought you could win every one of them. And that's what was so weird is when they didn't, and they, you know, it's one thing in the 90s when you think you can win every game and you lose one game a year. And this season, they lost three regular season games, and it just felt so terrible. Oh my gosh, this is so weird.
Did you think you could win every year, every game in 2009 with Lane Kiffin? Or did you not think you could beat Alabama, but then all of a sudden you're lining up for a field goal that could have beat Alabama?
Right. I didn't think they could beat Florida, and I didn't think they could beat Alabama. They lost by 10 to Florida. They lost by 2, I think, to Alabama.
After that Florida game, though, I think you went into the Bama game maybe not thinking you could win.
Maybe,
I mean, not thinking you were going to win, but there was a chance.
Thinking you could.
Right,
yeah.
Because they played so well.
I'd buy that.
I'm just trying to use Captain Touchback's logic and figure out, reverse engineer to when was, we're saying when will Tennessee be back? Like, when was Tennessee there last? I mean, obviously, like.
I mean, in 2016, you felt like you could win every game you played. But I think it's a consistency thing. I don't think it's 1 year. I think it's have you felt that way for 2-3 seasons now, and do you still feel that way? Okay, yeah, I think you can go ahead and say you're back. Because I think after the 2015 game against Alabama, you definitely thought that in 2016. It didn't go that way, but you thought you could.
So 2007, I guess, was kind of the end of it.
I would say 2000 to 2004, you probably thought you were going to win 90% of the games in those
like
four.
Thought you were going to, not even that you were, you know.
I'd agree with that.
Coin flip on the biggest game of the year.
Well, I mean, really, going into 2005, you felt pretty good about it, and the season just really fell apart.
Yeah, because weren't they ranked top five?
Mm-hmm.
Top five.
They were close.
Yeah.
And then 2006, you know, you beat Cal like that to start the season.
You finished in the top 25.
Yeah. I mean, you had a good couple of runs in there. It's really just been the last 10 years that have been horrible. Really, really bad.
I think Tennessee was preseason third in the nation in 2005.
Good grief.
Yeah. That was one of the best defenses Tennessee's ever fielded. They just couldn't figure out offense at all, which is why ultimately Randy Sanders got fired and you brought back David Cutcliffe for 2006-2007.
I mean, I'd forgotten you opened with UAB and won 17-10.
Yeah. It was not great. You jumped up 10-0, and then they started rotating quarterbacks, and then it was just hold on for dear life. UAB's given us some trouble in the past. I mean, it took overtime to beat them in 2010 or 11.
And then wasn't it Matt Sims had a game against them?
That was that one. Yeah. That was Denarius Moore getting carried off the field after an overtime win against UAB. If you want to know how quickly you fell after 2006-2007.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's not good. Not good at all.
Well, I mean, if this season gets really bad, like, that's going to be the game. That's going to be the, like, real freak-out game, right? Like, if you're getting blasted by Mississippi State, or you've lost to BYU, or both, and you get to UAB, and things get tight in the third quarter, that's when people are going to start throwing stuff.
Yeah, it'll feel like UMass. Only there's going to be a lot more evidence stacked up against the team at that point if it goes poorly. I'd really rather not think about
that. That was brutal, that game you're talking about. It was the fourth game of the season. So you beat Tennessee Martin 50-0 to start the year.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, okay, maybe this won't be so bad. And then Oregon, God, I still remember that one. Just,
we played good until the rain started.
Yeah.
And then they kept getting it to, was it Barner?
Kenyon Barner.
Lightning. Yeah, it was not good.
And then Florida boat races you pretty good. I mean, they were 10th in the country. But you still thought, there's two top 10 teams. We're still rebuilding.
Right.
We're on the way back. And
then you squeak by UAB.
Then UAB, and you're like, yeah, we got a problem.
Yeah. So, those were the days.
We'll come back. Final segment, hour number two.
Yippee.
It's all to play for. It's all ahead of us now. That's all you got to worry about.
Something like that.
Look to the future. We'll come back. Final segment, hour two, next. Final segment, hour number two, three and out right here on Fan Run Radio. This whole paintball game has created quite the controversy, Houston.
Controversy?
Yeah, Brian Niedermeyer tweeted out, like, kind of, it was kind of like an ask me anything, but then he was only going to answer like one question on something, some video or something.
Yeah.
One of the questions, a fan said, "Why are y'all playing paintball and not practicing?" Jeez.
That was a good that question voice by you.
Did you like that? Throw out the anti Vol for Life Facebook page. It's like a negative Vol for Life type of thing. Like a we don't get it, but in the wrong direction. Yeah. I mean, I'm squarely in the like for this whole conversation, like we'll wait and see. But, you know, just monitoring Jeremy Pruitt and the Vols and hoping for the best.
100 days, we'll figure
it
out.
You know,
we'll get our first batch of info.
We'll grade as we go. It could be a lot worse. You could have hired Willie Taggart, like Florida State decided to do. There's a really good write-up. This Connor O'Gara, I don't know him, but, I mean, Saturday Down South, let's be honest, they just aggregate a bunch of stuff, right, to try and drive traffic. Not a lot of original content coming out of there, but I will say this Connor Cat, he's at least pretty funny as he comments on what's been said or what is kind of in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And this past week to the Tampa, it was, I guess, Taggart was talking to some boosters on the Seminole Boosters Spring Tour. Kind of like the Summer of Smokey, but in spring.
But he actually goes.
And he's actually there, yeah.
Okay.
Apparently, the Tampa Bay Times reported this. I guess someone asked him, like, hey, how's off-season going? And Taggart said this, quote, "It's going well. We're undefeated. I think we've got the off-season ahead of us. Our players have been working really hard. Our team's been coming together the way we want it to. Really excited about this summer."
They are undefeated.
O'Gara writes, "Hey, Willie, Butch Jones called. He'd like his attitude back." Because, man, that sounds familiar. And what does "I think we've got the offseason ahead of us" even mean?
Don't really know. They're going to get it all figured out this summer?
I mean, is he just talking about the schedule? Like, really the offseason? Like, that's very, very confusing.
I don't know.
But we're undefeated. I mean, that's...
I'm glad Pruitt didn't say anything like
that's
that.
That's right up there with...
remember when Butch was here, and it was hearts. Before we hated him, and he would say stuff like that, and you just kind of... You didn't defend it, but you didn't go all in.
Yeah.
It feels nice to be able to go all in on Willie Taggart, who is a moron. But they have a plan. What was their plan again? What did they end up doing? They did go get a quarterback, right? Like, they do now have a scholarship quarterback on the roster.
I don't think so.
I thought they got a transfer.
Maybe it was a transfer.
Did they not?
Yeah, he's been there, what, 2 full recruiting cycles?
No quarterback.
Into the third. I still don't think they have a quarterback committed even in this next one.
Okay.
If Taggart is under the impression that last year's train wreck vanished into thin air, like Florida State's national relevance, I'm sorry, but
did you add that or was that him?
That was him in parentheses.
Nicely done, yeah.
I'm sorry, but he's incredibly mistaken. Oh, and before you tell me I'm taking that out of context, here's what Taggart had to say in relation to why he believes his team will improve from 5-7. Quote, "We don't talk about last year. I just don't think it's fair to gauge this team on last year's team. It's a totally different team. These guys have been working. They understand and are really helping build a culture that has won here. Going to year two."
How to build...
"We always talk about
wait.
Or you're getting worse. You don't stay the same. I think we're getting better in every aspect."
When I say wait, it means wait. Can you say that again?
"We don't talk about last year. I just don't think it's fair to gauge this team on last year's team. It's a totally different team."
See, if you'd have stopped when I told you to stop, you wouldn't have read all this nonsense. I'm specifically...
"These guys have been working. They understand and are really helping build a culture that has won here. They understand and are really helping build a culture that has won here." That's the sentence you wanted. "They understand and are really helping build a culture that has won here."
I mean, my head hurts. They're helping build a culture that has one. Does he mean that they're rebuilding the culture of winning, or that they're going to win, so they're building a culture that in the future will have one.
He and Butch both, especially Butch late in his tenure. I don't know if you remember this, but Butch used to say things near the end when we were criticizing him about every other sentence that made no sense. They need like a speech editor. Like they need to talk to like a translator, basically, just so that the media can't hear it. It's like in a soundproof booth.
They just release the paper.
Or the translator could come out and say what Butch meant to say or what Willie meant to say. Like,
just get him in a production studio. He records it. And they're like, can you say that line again? That does not make any sense, you
idiot. I'm going to add some words here. They understand.
We're undefeated. How about we plan to be undefeated? Oh, man.
They understand and are really helping build a culture that has won here. See, I would edit that to say they understand and are helping to build a culture like the ones in the past
right. That
have won here before.
Right.
Well, you just need to add a few words in there and you're good to go. I don't know how you change we're undefeated when it's May the 22nd.
Well, he's not wrong. It's just everyone is, buddy. Like, there's...
I mean, I guess you just say, we can, you know...
Also, you kind of are defeated because you didn't sign a quarterback and you don't have a plan. So
O'Gara writes, you don't talk about last year? Okay, well, excuse me, because I will bring up a few things that FSU did in the past year.
No, we're looking forward.
The most embarrassing part of the Seminoles' year wasn't that their offensive line avoided pass rushers like a high and tight fastball or that they took care of the football like a four-year-old walking a German shepherd. The most embarrassing thing has been watching FSU take L after L this offseason. Where should I start?
No, how about they're undefeated. It's impossible.
How about the first week in February when the Seminoles were down to one scholarship quarterback? Why were they down to one scholarship quarterback? Well, former ACC rookie of the year, DeAndre Francois, was kicked off the team after his girlfriend posted a video on Instagram alleging ongoing physical abuse. That was a month after Francois announced he was returning for his senior year. Didn't they like go back and say that wasn't true or something? I couldn't remember, but they like kicked him off before they even investigated, which seemed dumb. That same week, four-star recruit Lance Legendre surprisingly committed to Maryland over Florida State on National Signing Day.
I remember that.
The announcement came a couple months, and this is the
big
funniest
Enos
part,
guy.
After number three dual-threat quarterback recruit Sam Howell dropped his longtime FSU commitment only to sign with in-state North Carolina.
Mack Brown.
And if you want to include four-star John Reese Plumlee committing to Ole Miss instead of FSU in February, that was three major whiffs on quarterbacks in the 2019 class. That marked the second consecutive year that Taggart failed to sign a quarterback recruit. Let me repeat that because I'm not sure that came across like it was supposed to. Taggart, an offensive-minded head coach, has yet to sign a quarterback recruit at Florida State, and he's in his third recruiting cycle. Yeah, that's an L.
Undefeated.
I mean, to lose a quarterback to freaking Mack Brown when you're an offensive guru. Holy moly. Yeah, we're undefeated.
Sean Flatt tweets in, Taggart and Butch needed Keegan-Michael Key, a.k.a. Luther, Obama's anger translator. It's not a bad one. I would pay good money for a Willie Taggart, Butch Jones podcast. Were they asking real football questions?
Special guest, Kevin Sumlin.
And it's just, no, Sumlin, he might not be good, but he's not this bad. Yeah, he's true. Not this dumb. He's like, when he speaks, he sounds intelligent. He's just not a
he's
terrific.
He's just got a little Butch in him. They're buddies. It's more that they're buddies. It's not so much they're the same.
But Taggart and Butch have a lot of similarities. Whew. Just the everything's always fine, but don't forget how hard things are on us. But we're undefeated and 1% and blah, 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 blah.
O'Gara then talks about Kendall Briles being an L for Florida State. I don't know. That jury's still out there. We'll see, I guess. KB here.
KB here. Whew. When we get back after this break, I want to talk bowl projections, if that's okay with you.
I missed this end of the story. We can do that. That alone was probably enough to turn public opinion against FSU.
You think?
That was the Kendall Briles thing. I skipped over two paragraphs
of
that.
Here.
So instead of staying quiet and keeping a low profile following a historically awful season, FSU decided to take its losing to social media. How can one lose on social media, you ask? Oh, I don't know. How about photoshopping Martin Luther King Jr.'s hand into doing the tomahawk chop?
Yeah.
I hadn't seen this graphic.
Are you serious? This is a really big deal.
How did we not talk about this?
And they put that dude on a summer tour? Like, at least with Pruitt, like, the wins weren't there, but he hadn't done anything stupid to embarrass you.
Goodness gracious, that tweet, which was obviously deleted, came from the official FSU recruiting account. FSU's hashtag do something hashtag for the last year is almost too ironic. The Seminoles should try and do something that doesn't make their program the butt of every joke. For crying out loud, they finished number 119th against the pass and then tweeted this little gem because apparently the Gators made a claim that they didn't approve of. And it's this whole thing about claiming to be DBU. They got in an argument with Florida about DBU.
It's LSU anyway, so who cares?
Yeah. My goodness. Just on and on and on. I had not seen the Martin Luther King Jr. graphic. Good grief. Do something. Woo! Well, if you miss Butch Jones, you can watch Florida State and see him reincarnated. We'll come back. Hour 3. We'll get bowl predictions for Houston Crest next.